replenish, reimagine, recapture, rise.
Well, good morning, everyone. Yeah, I want to emphasize the buy all 18 books. Actually, we don't get any royalties, so it doesn't matter whether you buy them or not. It's interesting when we talk about the books because people think, oh man, they're going to retire rich. And no, we don't get a penny because when we work for the division, one of the rules is whatever's published, we don't get any royalties. But if you have nothing else to do and want to read something, you can do that. So thank you for the nice eulogy there and introduction, I guess we could call it as well. Thank you for wanting to spend the time with me today. I'm glad to see some of you. How many of you pastor? I know one. Okay, so I'm glad to see the five of you male pastors. I'm glad to see you ladies, but I would rather see your husbands with you as well, because this is something that we do together as pastors and our spouses. But I'm glad that you're here, and I know sometimes you have to choose and you have to divide and conquer, so to speak. So I'm going to tell you some things that are not from our things that we produce. Actually, I'm indebted to two friends and colleagues of mine, Dr. David Sedlacek, who's now retired from the seminary, and Dr. Alina Baltazar, who used to be at Andrews, now she's in San Diego. They did some research with preachers or pastors' kids, and so I'm indebted to them for their study. They shared that with me, and so I'm just going to add some things from my own experience as a father. When I became the director of family ministries at the North American Division, I was also men's ministers and single adult ministers, and I remember I came to Florida for some kind of a meeting, and it was with pastors too, and this pastor stopped me and he said, so you're the men's ministries director? And I said, yeah. He said, well, what qualifies you to have that position? And I said, well, I'm a man. That's the first qualification. And I don't know that there is a degree in men's ministry, so I don't know if he was looking for me to say I have a degree in men's ministries out of the whatever university. So my qualification for this presentation is I'm a father. I'm a pastor, retired pastor, but I'm a pastor and I'm a father. And I have to say to you that I don't believe I'm the best father that there is. And I have two very good girls, but they're not perfect. And we've had our challenges. In fact, I'd just like to introduce you to my family very briefly. My family is made up, I'm going to start with the youngest one, actually. Start with Wesley George, who just turned 1 year old in August 4, he turned 1 year old, and he's not walking, he's running all over the place. He's my personal exercise program. I have to chase him. And literally, we went out to eat last night because they were vacationing here in Orlando this last week, so I met him up for dinner, and after dinner, I took him off his high chair, and I was all over the restaurant, not walking after him, I was running after him. So he's my personal exercise program. And his oldest sister, Cecilia Rose, will be 3 years old on November 15. So our two youngest members of the family, their parents are our daughter, Hadassah, and her husband, Greg. Hadassah is a colorectal surgeon in Columbia, Missouri, which is the reason we now live in Missouri, because we are following our grandchildren wherever they go. We retired from the division and moved to Pennsylvania where they were living, and then she was offered this job in Columbia, Missouri, and she says, what are you guys gonna do? I said, well, we'll move. We sell the house and we'll find another place. So that's what we did. Our older daughter, Deanna Christine, is married to Andrew, and Andrew just got, he is still working for Northrop Grumman, but he was asked if he would work for 2 years in Sicily, Italy. And so they moved there in January, and we're going to see them in December. She's been to see us a couple of times since they moved, but we haven't been out there to see them. We had wanted to, we had plans to go see them, but my wife, who's this girl here, was diagnosed with breast cancer in March and went through surgery and then chemo, and now she's going through radiation. So because of her treatment, we had to cancel our plans to go to Italy to see our kids. But her treatment should be over the first week or the end of October, 28th of October, and so we're planning to go out there for Christmas. So that's our family. So we have two daughters. Our older daughter and her husband don't have children, can't have children, and don't want to have children. So therefore, our grandchildren from our younger daughter are the only ones that we have and will have, unless they choose to have more, obviously. And as you can tell, they are the most beautiful and they are the smartest grandchildren I have. You agree with that, right? Well, but that's, I mean, when you look at the whole world, they are the best that I have. You know, some of you are grandparents and you were just going to jump and say, no, it's okay for your grandparents. I'm talking about my grandchildren. So Drs. Balthasar and Sedlacek actually interviewed preacher's kids. And what I liked about what they did is that their conclusions are not based on some theoretical research, but they actually talked to pastors' kids and came up with a number of conclusions from the kids. And that's what I would like to share with you today. And by the way, if you're interested, and I'm going to try to go through it all pretty quick because we have the second session and still want to give you some time for questions. But we will upload the PowerPoint presentation to either the RISE website or wherever they have it, so you can download the whole thing. So these are the conclusions that the kids came up with. There were some areas of stress and challenges that they faced. And by the way, I'm going to be sharing not only the headings of the conclusions, but actually what the kids said, what the pastor's children said, what they felt. And that's what I think is more important than anything. So number one, some of you who are parents, obviously, you know these things because your kids are probably telling you some of these things. But what about the pressures and expectations? Number one, high behavioral expectations. You are a pastor's child. There's a certain way that you have to behave.
Yes.
You know, they feel it. Maybe inadvertently, we as parents have said to them, don't do that. Remember, I'm a pastor. It's a way of saying, don't embarrass me. Don't do those kinds of things because I'm the one that's going to be questioned. So inadvertently, we may say some things like that. So this is one of the things that the kid said, he should be better than this. He's a pastor's kid, but which, by the way, it's a pastor's kid saying, that's what I hear from the members of the church. You should behave a certain way because your dad is the pastor. You don't have the right as a child to be a child. You're a pastor child. That's different. Now, you and I know, if you have children, that your children are children first. They will behave the way they will want to behave. They have been taught to behave, but there are times when they will simply do their thing. You know, now we're in the second stage, which is the grandparenting, and our grandchildren, we're seeing some of those things where even though the parents are doing, I think, an excellent job, and then we are there to support them in what they do, but they are already showing signs of wanting to do their thing. Of course, they're not pastor's kids, but regardless, they're kids. But that's one of the things that pastor's kids have to deal with. Here's another one. So I can't even live a life. I can't scratch my nose without scratching it in the wrong way. Pastor's kids don't scratch their nose that way. Like, you know, I couldn't live, and I just hate being a pastor's kid. Like, to the point where I was just like, Dad, I don't even want to be with a pastor. It even got to that point. Think about how sad it is to hear from a child, from your child, to say, I don't even want to be with a pastor. Now, he didn't say, I don't want to be a pastor. I don't want to be with a pastor. So, just to be a little vulnerable, my older daughter is not in church. She does not hate church. She's not against the church. but she just doesn't feel like the church really is necessary for her life right now. She taught for the church school system in two different academies, and the principal of both those academies were horrible and basically drove her out of the church, which if it was in our power to get rid of those principals, we would have. We were at the division, but the division doesn't say, conference people, please fire those principals because they are destroying my daughter. But that's what happened. So our daughter, even though we have a wonderful relationship, and that's what we count on, we have a wonderful relationship with our girls, but she's not in church. As a pastor's kid, it hurts me to death. As a parent, it hurts me to death. And that's hopefully what we're trying to prevent from any pastor that has kids. Here's another example. It makes it very confusing for you as a pastor's kid because it's like we're not doing like anything wrong, but it makes us feel like we're doing something wrong, even though like everyone out there, they're all doing the same thing. They all dress just like I do. They all do the same things I do, but it's like I have to like pretend all the time that I'm like some like perfect kid because what will people say? Imagine that kind of pressure on your kids. If everyone is wearing jeans and your child is wearing jeans and the church says, no, they should be wearing pants because they're a pastor's child. Everybody's listening to some music and so is the pastor's child. No, because that's the pastor's child. The pastor's child shouldn't listen to that music, shouldn't act like that, shouldn't laugh, shouldn't be running. That's an awful lot of pressure on a child to have to experience. Being stereotyped, it's another of the resulting experiences for pastors' kids. I mean, everyone that you'll meet is gonna either think that you're either crazy and wild, or you're going to church every week, reading your Bible, doing your Bible studies, and helping the sick, and going on mission trips. So think about this for a moment. So either so you're a pastor's child, so one conclusion means you must be wild and crazy, because that's what pastor's child, we've had three pastors and pastors are all crazy. Or if they are well-behaved and they study the Bible, they're fanatics. Either extreme is bad. So where do they put themselves? Where do they put themselves? Another expectation is to be an example. We need you to be an example for these people because you are the pastor's kid and these people are acting out and they were a little younger than me, so they are like, oh, we need you to be an example to them, become close to them and help them to become more like you. So now the pastor's child, not only do they have to behave a certain way, but they also have to behave even better so that other kids will follow their example. And if you don't behave properly, then it's your fault if they're lost. It's not their decision, the other kid's decision. It's your fault because you didn't lead them the right way. I mean, that pressure is not put on any of us, but it's put on pastors' kids. Sometimes, I don't know if it is as extreme for everybody, but sometimes there is a sense of it, I don't meet these expectations of people like they are all going to go to hell because of me. I mean, I don't want to live under that kind of weight. Spiritual maturity, another of those expectations. Again, this is our kids talking. I feel like in other families, it's something you kind of have to work towards. But in a pastor's family, it's something that's already expected to just kind of be there, and it's not something you are like trying to get to. So if you're a pastor's child, you should be born a mature Christian. Right? Any other child, they are children and they can grow physically, emotionally, and spiritually like everybody else. But a pastor's child should be born a mature Christian. You don't know the answer to this, but you're the pastor's kid. You know, thank you. We used to, with my girls when they were little, we used to play all kinds of table games, including Sabbath table games, and we've had a wonderful time. I try not to win all the time. You know what I'm saying. I knew the answers. I studied theology, so I knew or should know some of those things. My kids didn't. So sometimes I'd let them answer, and they got better at it. And the more we played, the more they could answer Bible trivia, which is good. But it doesn't mean that they have to know everything that I do. I went to school to learn these things. I'm the pastor. I'm studying my Bible on a regular basis. They don't have to know any of the or all of these things. Even with my oldest daughter, with my both of daughters, actually, I should say, I don't expect them to know everything that I do. It's not their career. Why should they know everything that I do? Here's another pressure and expectation: church participation. You go in the children's choir, you participate in vacation Bible school, you open the church, you grow a little bit, and you get in Pathfinders, you're a junior usher, then you're a deacon, then you're doing everything. You are in the AY society, about to be the AY leader. Since the pastor is the leader of the church, you're expected to be involved in activities so you can be the next leader of the church. So if you have a number of kids in the church and you ask them to do something, some of them will say, no, I don't want to do it. And that's okay. But not if you're a pastor's kid. You have to do it. You have to be an example. You have to show others. It's expected of you. How come the pastor's kid is not running the sound system? Why is it that they're not playing an instrument? Why is it that they're not doing this, that, or whatever? Things have changed since first became a pastor almost 40 years ago. But I remember as a young pastor, as a young parent, often we had bulletin folding parties at home. Meaning, the bulletin secretary forgot to tell me that she was going to be going away for the weekend, but she told me on Friday afternoon, so now I have to do the bulletin, go to church and copy it, bring it home, and then with the girls we would have our bulletin folding parties. We do it as a family, and we had a good time. I don't think the girls were like, oh. But that's the expectation, you know? The family has to get involved. You have to do it. And the kids are saying, well, why do I have to do it? Just because I'm the pastor's kid, I have to do all those things? Why do we put that expectation on the kids? Not only that, do they have that pressure, but the spiritual struggles that they themselves face and are criticized for, they just hold you to such a high standard that, like, it makes you feel inferior to everyone else. I mean, just imagine every time if the pastor's kid doesn't answer the right way, the biblically correct way, gives the Bible trivia answer, people would look at you and say, and you're the pastor's child? Like, You're worthless. You haven't been paying attention. Your parent who's a pastor must not be a very good person. And of course, the pastor's wife, obviously she failed. Like, you have to go to war against this church. So every week you put on your suit. Step up. We're going to church. I realized that I needed God to help me with these problems and to lead me. So that's one of those good results, in that there are some pastor's kids who realize that, hey, I need to have a relationship with God myself. Not because it's expected of me, because I'm a pastor's child, because I want to have a relationship with God. So here's some examples of those spiritual struggles that many pastors' kids face. Spiritual growth. Your kids never have pastors, and they can go through stuff and they won't ever get to call a pastor because you're daddy, and maybe it is something you don't want to tell daddy. Think about that, pastors, for a moment. Your children don't have a pastor. You are the parent. They don't have a pastor, unless you happen to be in a pastor church, you know, one of those mega churches in our denomination, meaning a couple thousand, 3,000 member church, and you have several pastors, and maybe your child at least feels comfortable enough to go talk to one of the other pastors. But if you are in a 1, 2, 3, 4 church district where you're the one and only person, the one and only pastor, who do they go to if they have spiritual struggles? And you think, well, they should come to me as a father. Well, it would be wonderful, but sometimes they may want to talk to somebody else, but they may not have that opportunity. So they're already cheated in a way because they don't have a pastor. And when you're absent all the time, how could they even go to you when you're not home? You know, I'm talking to myself. I don't know if you remember the song. This goes back probably before most of you were even born. Cats in Cradle. Cats in Cradle. Anyone remember that song? Cats, a couple of you, okay. I hate that song. Every time I listen to it, every time I read it, I start crying because it talks about me. A child arrives just the other day. He came to the world in the usual way, but there were planes to catch and bills to pay. He learned to walk while I was away, which sounds kind of normal, right? But over and over in that song, the message is, one day I'll spend time with you, son. The day will come. We'll spend time. We'll get together then, son. You know we'll have a good time then. Well, the child arrived just from colleges the other day. I forget all the words right now. Arrived from colleges the other day. So grown, I see, I had to say. So now the father says, son, why don't we spend some time together? And the child says, yeah, dad. But what I need now is the car keys. Can I have them, please? But we'll get together then, Dad. Things turn around. When the child then gets married and has children, and now the father is older and says, let's get together. Yes, but the kids have the flu and I've got bills to pay. But we'll get together then, Dad. I'm thinking of many times when I said to my girls, I can't do it right now. I have to do something else. I have to go see somebody else. But when I get back, we'll get together. And now there are times I have to confess again. We have a very good relationship with my girls, but there are times when now they're saying, yeah, but I can't do it right now, Dad. But we'll get together later. So now I'm paying the consequences of that, so to speak. So how we spend our time with our kids now may come back to bite us later. See, that's what I'm telling you. I wasn't the perfect dad. And sometimes I think, man, I wish I could go back to my first year in ministry and change so many things that I did wrong as a young pastor and as a young dad. My dad told us, God has chosen the three of you to be missionaries in this country. And now it's your privilege to find out what that mission is. And those words just stuck in my mind until today. It just makes me even want to cry because I felt like God had chosen me for a purpose. Now, it doesn't say that that was a negative thing. Some kids will take that as a privilege. What an honor. What a wonderful thing. And others might respond kind of like Fiddler on the Roof. Well, thank you for choosing me, but can you choose somebody else for a little while? Another issue that was identified was the lack of social and family support. Here's an interesting one that I just mentioned, the father often absent. There were so many times as I was leaving home late in the afternoon or early evening to go visit a member that I was thinking, man, everybody's going home after work and I'm going away from home for work. It's the opposite, and I have to say there were times when I hated it. I wanted to be home with my kids, with my wife, but I was going away. Everybody's normal going home. I'm the weird one that's going away from home. Well, it's not a 9-to-5 job, you know, and so you never know when dad is going to need to go. And so the phone rings and maybe you were supposed to do something. Maybe the family had something planned at that time. Maybe it was quality time with just you. It was family time and all of a sudden everything has just changed and up, and it's holy thing because this is God's work and it's got to be done. So to what degree do we let pastors say no to a funeral or no to a hospital visit? Our pastor now, where we just moved to, was talking to him last week. We were supposed to go out to lunch, and he said, hey, I'm sorry, won't we be able to go to lunch because a member of the church died? And so I responded and said, you know, no worries. I said, people died at the most inconvenient time to us pastors. Laughed. You know, we can talk about those things among us here. Obviously, people don't die at inconvenient times. I was just joking to say, yes, I understand. I remember Easter morning, Easter Sunday. I don't celebrate Easter. We never did with the kids, but I remember that it was Easter morning. Got a call from my elder in New Jersey, and he said, Dan just had a heart attack and died. Dan was my head elder. So while we had planned that Sunday morning to spend it with the family, as a family, again, we don't celebrate Easter. We didn't have anything special other than being together. I had to say, gotta go. You know, you can't say to the family, sorry, it's my family day, call me tomorrow, or I'll stop by later tomorrow. You have to do some of those things. The hospital visit, you know, especially if it's an emergency. Although with years, I learned to teach my members, if it's not an emergency, I won't be there. Because it aggravated me many times when members think it's an emergency, but it's only an emergency to them. I remember one Sunday evening, in fact, I got a call. We were in Chesapeake at that time, and got a call from my head elder who said, hey, so-and-so, and I knew this so-and-so had cancer, but so she said, so-and-so, they just took her to the hospital. It's an emergency. And so I said, okay. Got in my car and started driving to the hospital, which was about 20 minutes away. When I was literally three blocks from the hospital, my head elder called me and said, oh, by the way, she's at this other hospital. I had to turn around. It was 40 minutes in that direction. Wish you had told me that before, but I guess I should have asked the question. Got to the hospital, and at the reception area, information desk, whatever, I said, is so-and-so here? And said, yeah, she's in room so-and-so. And I thought, what? Room? Doesn't that? I thought she was brought in as an emergency. I was expecting them to say ICU or the emergency room. No, she's in room so-and-so. Okay. So I went up to the room. I remember I walked in her room, and she was playing solitaire. Not Uno, solitaire. Those evil cards that you, anyways. So she's playing solitaire in her little TV tray table, whatever it's called. And so I walked in and said, hey, how you doing? Oh, hey, Pastor, how are you? Good. And so what's going on? She said, yeah, I just had a little infection, and my husband thought it would be better to come into the hospital. Oh, so it wasn't an emergency? Oh, no, it was just but they want to keep me here overnight anyways. So it wasn't an emergency. This is an aside, I guess, but had my visit, had prayer, and as I was leaving, I remember this very well. As I'm leaving, she said, oh, by the way, Pastor, you know that sermon you preached yesterday? I said, yeah. He says, that's got to be the most boring sermon I ever heard. So I missed time with my family, went to the wrong hospital. It was not an emergency, and then get insulted on top of that. So sometimes I'd learn from that again to say, okay, what is the case? Well, they just took it as a routine thing. Okay, I'll be there during office hours, so to speak. I don't have to be there right now. I'll leave my family to be there right now. So sometimes you have to do that. Again, I would do it now. See, I'm retired. I can say that. I can think about what I would do differently if I were working. But I know where you guys live and work. It can be different. And it's very, very, you have to do things very carefully. You don't want to offend everybody, and then you'll be looking for a job because, well, you didn't visit so-and-so who was playing solitaire in the hospital room. You know how it is. I think I'll turn this off here. Lack of social and family support again. Peers believing stereotypes. They would have parties and tell me about it and say to me, but you can't come because you are the pastor's daughter. So now it's only, not only is it the expectation of the members, but even their peers. So we're going to have a party, but don't invite the pastor's kid because it'll ruin the party. We can't have fun because, you know, they're godly. Even if they are as normal as everybody else, but it just ruins the party to have the pastor's kid, so don't invite them. So now they're isolated. Don't have any kind of social interaction with peers because they don't want them to be there. Facebooks and Instagrams and everything and what we allow the outside world to see of our lives because of my dad being afraid of what other people would think. My whole life, it's always been that, like, don't say this to anyone, don't do this, because, like, what will people think of our family? Now, obviously, I don't think it's necessarily bad, not because we're a pastor. We don't want to just air the dirty laundry, so to speak, out there. But not because you're a pastor's family. Don't do that, because it makes me look bad as a pastor. What are people going to say? Making new friends due to frequent moves. That was one of my oldest daughter's challenges. I still struggle to maintain friendships, and it doesn't have to do with expectations. It had to do with how often we moved. Because whenever we moved, my friendships would stop, and I didn't maintain friendships. When we moved to Milwaukee, our daughter was just going into the eighth grade, which was a horrible time to move. Because remember, the eighth grade is when they graduate. And my daughter came in when all of her peers had been together for 7 years. She came in as a newcomer. She's a very bright girl. And even though she didn't want to show it, there were times when a teacher would ask a question, she knows the answer. She responds. So they would call her the walking dictionary. She came home one day, "Dad, they're calling me the walking dictionary." I said, "Good." She said, "Dad, that's not a compliment. It's an insult." And they made that whole year was horrible for her, so that she begged us, she said, "Please don't make me go to school next year there anyways." And we said, "Well, remember, we, from the beginning, we always said you will go to an Adventist school until you graduate from college. So the only option is we have to homeschool you." And she said, "I'll do it." And she did it. It was not the best thing, challenging for both my wife and me in our job. She was a teacher, I'm the pastor. We're trying to manage all of these things. But it wasn't good for her socially either. She was at home by herself all week long. So we sent her to academy for the 10th, 11th, and 12th years of her education. But it was a horrible time for her to move. In fact, she said to me, "I wish we had lived someplace where I had been with my friends all their life like they are." Wow. They are. Now, of course, one thing I said to the girls, because again, they felt like they were cheated. They didn't have friends all the time. But I said, "Well, I understand that part, but let's think about some of the advantages you have had that none of those kids have. Think about all the states we have visited with you, all the places that we have been to because we have moved so much. Look at those kids, and you know that some of those kids have never left the city of Milwaukee, much less the state of Wisconsin. They've never been on an airplane. They don't know what the city of Chicago looks like, even in pictures. And you've been to all these places, New York, Chicago, Los Angeles. I mean, I started naming places up in Canada, down in Mexico, all kinds of places we've been to." It wasn't a good answer. It just didn't meet their need. Today, now that they're grown up, now they're coming back to say, "Dad, you know what? We're so glad we went to so many of those places." My daughter in Sicily, they spend the weekend in Albania. She was laughing. She says, "You know how much the tickets cost, Dad? $35 a piece to go from Sicily to Albania. Spent the weekend there." And they love traveling. Says, "Dad, thank you for taking us to so many places." "I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you just said." "Oh, I know you heard that. I know what you heard." So now they appreciate it a lot more. They feel comfortable going places. They can travel anywhere in the world and feel very comfortable. Whereas many people still don't know what it's like to fly in an airplane. But when you're a kid, you don't appreciate that. What you're missing is, "I don't have friends. I can't have friends." I would ask God to give me good friends because I knew I had to start all over, you know, being the new girl at school, the new girl at church, how to get to know the people around my house, you know, my neighbors. And sometimes it was good and sometimes you miss your friends. Sometimes you didn't know you were going to make any friends. Which, by the way, I just saw someone that we worked with many years ago. And he said to me something interesting. He said, you know, when we left this particular state, we moved, and I never heard any more from anyone in that church. And that was disappointing. And I said, welcome to pastoral ministry. You know, we pastored, I don't know how many churches. I say we've lived in 10 states. I think before going into the conference and then the division, I think I pastored a total of 12 churches or something like that. And every time we left the church, we love you, we're going to miss you, we'll be in touch with you. That's the last time we heard from them. Now, we could call them and say, oh, I'm so glad to hear from you. I was just thinking about you the other day. Well, pick up the phone and call. How come you guys are the only ones whose phones receive phone calls, but you can't dial out? But that's the reality of ministry. Now, we have a few people that have stayed in touch with us, very few. And maybe that's the best thing anyways. But our kids miss that. Oh, we love you, we love you, we're going to miss you. And then you leave and they never hear from their friends anymore. And so they have to go into a new church and make friends. By the way, my daughter one time said, well, it's easy for you, Dad. You go in and make friends with everybody. And I said, no, I don't make friends with anybody. I'm the pastor. I'm friendly to all of them, but I'm not their friend. Remember, I'm the pastor. And they're not my friends. I'm the pastor. And you well know this. When I was in college, one of my teachers said, pastoring is one of the loneliest professions. And we thought, you're surrounded by people all the time. What do you mean by lonely? I understood that later. You can't trust your people. You can't. You can't go to one of your people unless you have a very mature Christian member of the church and say, I'm depressed today. I had suicidal thoughts. I felt like leaving my family, whatever. Sometimes those thoughts may cross your mind. You know, I looked at a pornographic picture the other day. I don't know why I did it. I hate myself for it, but I did. Would you tell one of your members something like that? That's the end of your ministry right there. Could be anyways. So you can't trust anyone. So I said, I understand that now it is lonely. You have to make friends with people you trust. And you do have, if you have that, that's wonderful. And I do have some people I can trust that I can call and say, I've done it, I've had it, I can't do this anymore. I won't tell you some stories because then it's just revealing way too much. But there was a time when I said, I'm done, not with the church, I'm never giving up on the church, but I'm done with this pastoral ministry style. I'm done. And if it wasn't for another pastor friend, I probably wouldn't be here, at least standing here telling you what's going on. So we need someone like that. But what about the kids? Making new friends again, and like we said, having other PKs that are your friends, it helps a lot. But it means if you don't have that, there is no one to turn to. So the Greater New York Conference, I don't know if they still do it. But I know for a number of years they had a PK conference, and it was only PKs from the little ones, sometimes into their 20s. One of the best things I think they did, because it was only PKs talking to one another about their challenges, and they didn't have to put on any mask there because they were all PKs. Doesn't matter if I act one way or another, I'm okay. I'm with the others who feel the same way or who know the same thing. So maybe if your conference doesn't do that, maybe you can suggest it to them, because I think it's very healthy for the conference. Now, ways that they cope with those stressors. In some ways, negative coping, and so it was more internalized. It was too much pressure, way too much pressure, and that is what makes people do very crazy things. I know PKs who turned to methamphetamines, and I know PKs who became hard drug addicts. I know PKs that use sex as a way to escape. So some PKs use negative coping by going to the extremes, the bad things that they sometimes do. And I personally struggled with pornography for years until lately, very recently was I able to get out of this, of its grips as an adult. I had no one to talk to, and coming from a Latin background, we don't talk to psychologists because there is nothing wrong with you. Negative coping. But some learn some positive coping. I knew I was willing to come before God's presence and presentable before God, so I was okay. So I felt like I didn't really care about what people thought that much. Here's another one. My parents helping me develop my own personal relationship with God really helped me because they helped me understand how I could relate to God and how I could talk to God. They didn't just tell me to read the Bible. They told me how to read the Bible in order to gain the Word of God in my life, you know, how to apply the Word of God to my life instead of just saying. I'm going to skip to this one, cultural differences. And here's for those of you who come from a different cultural background. So here's one child. Yeah, but the Haitian culture is a very specific culture that is not, it is very hard to communicate with. They don't show emotions. They don't have, you don't have a say even to this day now. It is just like you say what you say, but it is what my word is at the end of the day. From the Hispanic culture, I had no one to talk to, and coming from a Latin background, we don't talk to psychologists because there's nothing wrong with you. I mean, why are you going to? There is a stigma. So you have to be aware of that if you come from a different culture that maybe does not see psychology or emotional needs as important. You have to deny them, you have to put them, hide them under the rug. You have to find ways to help your kids vent. So here are the recommendations. I want to close with this pretty quick. These are not the recommendations from Drs. Baltazar and Sedlacek. These are the recommendations from the kids. The kids are the ones, the PKs are the ones that are saying, this is what we would like to see or would like to have seen. So this is for you guys. Schedule family time. I heard of conferences that are more innovative and open that will say to the pastor's family, hey, every 6 months or once a month or fifth Sabbath a month, that is your weekend to go to church wherever you want to. So one of the things that I did in my ministry that I enjoyed the most was when I was ministerial secretary, and I got a chance to go to the pastor's meetings and talk to the pastors and remind them. Now, conferences are different, by the way. In this particular conference, we emphasize taking 2 days a week. 2 days a week. Some conferences will say 1 day a week. Two days a week. So it was my joy and pleasure to go to my pastors and say, are you taking your 2 days? And I remember one pastor who said to me, I just can't do it. I said, what do you mean you can't do it? You know, just the church demands so much. I said, you have to do it. Let me tell you a secret. I don't know, this is, now that I retire, I can tell you guys who I work. I'm gonna tell you a secret. Okay, you ready for this? When you die, the church will not care. The church will go on without you. Okay, well, now I say, yes, the church will care. The church will go without you. Your family needs you. Spend time with your family. Look at your calendar. If you're a spouse's pastor spouse, help your pastor spouse to deal with the calendar better. If you can't manage your calendar yourself, recruit your spouse to help you with that. Whenever, one of the first things that I ever did was to look at my calendar for next year, and the first thing I would do is schedule my vacations. If you don't do that, the church will take up every bit of your time, and you'll come to the end of the year and realize another year and I didn't take all my vacation. So I would always schedule vacation. There are times that I couldn't do any, that I couldn't change. Camp meeting has to be there. Pastors' retreats in January and August, they have to be there. The monthly meetings, they have to be there, although there were times when that's the only time I can take vacation. So I had to talk to the conference and say, if I don't take it then, another year without vacation. Unfortunately, I had good administrators that were willing to let me take the time off. Hopefully the conferences will be conscious enough that there are times when you just have to go. But work on your personal time before you schedule anything for the church. Schedule your family time. Well, I'm going to skip that because we're running out of time. Opportunities for peer support. It is 11:15, correct? Yeah. And I think that it is another thing that should happen within our conferences is more reaching out to other pastors' kids in our area. I met another one. We met later in life, but you know, we share the same experiences. So again, if you can somehow, even if you have a, if the conference doesn't do it, but you can find a way to get with other pastors that have kids and organize events for your kids to be together, that's better than nothing. Number three, more understanding from the conference. Maybe somehow, like explaining to like officials in the church and teachers of the classes, like that it's like we need to be like, be treated the same as everyone else and given like the same opportunity to make mistakes like everyone else and not get reprimanded when we don't know the answer. So I know from the other side, the administrator side, because I was the executive secretary in Minnesota, I know from administration there are things that we feel we have to get accomplished. There's no conference that feels it doesn't matter if we don't grow. No, every conference wants to grow. In order to grow, we ask the pastors, you need to have evangelistic meetings. You have to train your members. You need to have baptisms. Hey, tithe, it would be good if you encourage your members to, you know, return the tithe and offerings. It's things that we as administrators have to do. But hopefully you have one of those conferences that supports your ministry, not the goals of the ministry, okay? If you do, blessed be you. If you don't, go to another conference, I'm telling you. There are conferences that, and administrators, again, I could give you names of places where they are, I hate to use the word, but it's probably a close one, slave drivers. They just make the pastors work to death. And so if you're in one of those conferences and you can find another one, go someplace, I'm telling you. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. Number four, parents need to protect their children. Again, this is another recommendation from the kids. I would have wished that he, my dad, would have said to me, you know I'm the pastor and I know the church is going to say certain things about you, but no matter what you do, I love you and I care about you and you're still my child regardless of what deacon so-and-so and sister so-and-so said. You know, I'm still your parent and I'm your parent first before I'm somebody's pastor. That's where I failed. Because I had to say to my kids many times, you need to sit with mom. Instead of allowing them to sit maybe with one of the kids. And they were not disruptive necessarily. They were just simply being kids. They were not disruptive of the service, but I didn't like the, you know, they were still chatting a little bit. So there were times when maybe I should have said, you're my kid, I love you. Don't worry about what so-and-so says. I remember we were in a church and they went to Six Flags. And that evening, they came back, and this particular member said, boy, yeah, the kids did wonderful, but your daughter was wild. And I had to talk to my daughter and said, you know, what happened? Well, we're just having a good time. Well, maybe tone it down a little bit. I shouldn't have done that. You know what I wish I had said to her now? Now I can say, I'm retired, remember? I'm retired. Wish I could have said to you, leave my kid alone. Let her be a kid. But I didn't do that. Number five, again, teach positive coping. I definitely think counseling could have personally helped me so much. There were so many things that I felt I could talk to my dad about. He was a pastor. Couldn't talk to friends because they knew my dad was a pastor. I couldn't go to church members. It would have been nice to have somebody to kind of just get things out. So if your kids need to go talk to a professional, if you can find one that you can trust, by all means, that's money worth investing. And here's where the last one that I thought was interesting, show appreciation. And then maybe allowing the kids into the stories, allowing them into the successes, allowing them to hear and participate in the positive results of the work. You know, because this happened, so-and-so was anointed at the hospital and so-and-so was healed. Here's another response. The pastors have this brotherhood connection type thing. The pastor's wives have the shepherdess clubs, and I think PKs are kind of left out. The pastor's birthday comes, here's a gift. The first lady's birthday is here, here's what we do for our first ladies. Our birthday comes, it was your birthday? Yeah, oh cool. I was very blessed in two churches where for Pastor Appreciation Month, they would give me a gift, my wife a gift, and the kids, they also got gifts. I was blessed to have that kind of a church, not all the churches. I remember one church where I happened to show up at church, went to church on Sabbath morning, and they had this huge card. I mean, it was like the size of a poster. And then they had a smaller one too, and they were telling the members to sign. I thought, well, that was kind of nice. And then after the service, they gave me the little one, and I said, oh, thank you. And what about the big one? I said, no, that's for the former pastor. Well, thank you very much. I'm moved. That same church, it's kind of funny in a way. Now, that same church, when we left, they had a little farewell party, and they said, traditionally, we give our pastors a scrapbook, and we put pictures of the things that have happened while the pastor was here. So here's your scrapbook. I said, wow, that's pretty cool. We started looking, and we're not on any pictures. Well, that's kind of strange. And so I said, how come we're not in any pictures? He says, oh, you hadn't arrived yet. It's like, oh, thank you again. Well, I have to say that book didn't make it out of that state. It's still probably in that state somewhere. I don't hold on to those kinds of things. All right, so those are the kinds of things that pastors' kids in interviews say, these are the things that we deal with and the kinds of things that they recommend. Family time. By the way, Dwayne McBride, who's a now retired professor at the seminary, did a wonderful piece of research that shows that when families, pay attention to this, when families sit together at dinner at least five nights a week, it doesn't even have to be every single night, but at least five nights a week, there's a lower incidence of teenage pregnancy. And among boys, there's a lower incidence of depression, suicide, and drug abuse, just by sitting to dinner with your family at least five nights a week. So if you can arrange your schedule so that you can have dinner with your family, if you can arrange your schedule so that you have time with your family, that you can take your vacations with the family, you'll probably be doing more than anything else you could do for them. And we have about, 5-6 minutes. So if you have any questions, we can do that. So what the research shows is that those families that spent at least five dinners together, they had a lower incidence of teenage pregnancy, obviously for girls, lower incidence of depression, drug abuse, and suicide by boys. So that right there should be an incentive to do something for the family. And by the way, when you're with a family, one of the worst things that we do, I was going to say, where's my phone? But I put it here to remember to take something. Turn that cell phone off. Turn it off. When I was ministerial, I had a pastor's meeting, and this pastor kept going out of the room to answer. I had to stop him one time and say, listen, we are paying you to be here. We're paying the professionals, experts to come here. We need you to be here. But I said, but you know what worries me the most is that what you do when you're at home with your family? Always answering the phone. Because when you do that, the message you're sending your family is, whoever is calling me is more important than you. Is that the message you want to send to your family? So turn it off. Yes. So again, I think their suggestions are more valuable than my suggestions. So you want me to go over them quickly? Because what they said, I think, is very wise. So let's look at the six suggestions that they provided. So the first one, again, schedule family time. We already said that. The second one, opportunities for peer support. So if you can find other PKs that they can share with, because again, it's not just to say, well, let's get some church kids together because the PKs will not feel comfortable with them, or vice versa. So find other PKs that they can be of support to one another. More understanding from the conference. That's the biggest challenge, because you can't go to the conference and say, I need more family time. It's just, again, if your conference is one of those that does not support you and your family, then you may be looking, or should be looking, or could be looking at another conference. Parents need to protect their children. So this is one of those areas, again, where you sometimes have to be very strong and say, you need, don't have to say it in these words, but you need to leave my kids alone. I'm the one that got paid, that gets paid to be the pastor. You have any criticism? Talk to me. Tell me. But you leave my kids alone. Protect them. Number five, teach positive coping. And if that means talking to me, talking to a professional, talking to a peer, whatever you need to do, let me know. Let's see how we can work it together. Provide you what you with what you need. And number six, show appreciation. So that it is again, so again, it is to say to the kids, I know the struggles that you're going through, but I appreciate you, love you, I care about you. And if I'm not doing a good job as a parent because I'm the pastor, let me know so that we can make the changes where you will feel supported, where you will feel that you matter to me, not to the church, but to me. So again, to me, those are very wise, very wise. All right, any other questions in the next 2 minutes? All right, yes. When your kids are in boarding school, what do you mean, what do you do? So if you chose to send them there, which I don't object to that, I mean, we send both of our daughters to boarding academy. Well, one of them, we moved, and then she ended up living at home. But we send them there because, again, there were no other options. Certainly, public school was not an option. We told them from the beginning that is not an option. If you misbehave, you think you're going to take you out of an academy or an Adventist school and put you in public school, that is not an option. So your only options are either church school or home school. You want to have your parents or your teachers? No. Okay, then you behave. Anyway, so, I mean, when they're not in your home anymore, there's so much that you can't control. You can't control some of that environment. Hopefully, they will find in that environment a positive situation, both with their peers and with their staff. But, you know, again, once they leave the house, even if it's at academy age, there's only so much you can control when they're not there under your roof. Yeah. All right, well, thank you very much. I wish you the best in your parenting journey with your kids. A friend of mine said that PKs should have a special measure of grace. And I think that God does have a special measure of grace and love for PKs. I hope that you also provide them with the same.
Thank you so much. Can we give a hand to our presenter? Thank you so much.